No. Never give up. Never surrender.
Your orders, sir? Sir, your orders.
Activate the Omega 13.
Hello, fellow Thermians. Welcome to our first episode of Let's Talk Through, a podcast about the influence of pop culture in our lives. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Laura.
All right, everyone. Today, we're going to discuss sci-fi cons, pop culture influences that the movie Galaxy Quest beautifully portrayed, and the behind-the-scenes shown in Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary. So we are going to go into a discussion. Our first topic that is going to be about Galaxy Quest is the impact of the conventions depicted in the movies and how that reflects what it's like at a real convention. I'll start off, and it was... I have not been to many cons and was supposed to go to actually Walker Stalker Chicago this weekend, but, you know, the apocalypse kind of happened.
And Walker Stalker's no more.
Yes.
So many other things no more.
Yeah. But I have to say, it was my first one I ever went to was when I was younger. And I have to say it was like in the late 80s in Oklahoma City. And I just remember I was like so blown away by it, and it was also the first time I ever saw a Klingon.
What was this? Do you remember what it was?
It was like 80, it was late 80s, so I think it was probably like 89-ish, maybe? It's so long ago, so who knows if it like, it was crossover 90 or not, but I have the pictures of it. I remember it was my first con.
What was it? Do you remember what it was?
Was it a comic book convention or was it just a general sci-fi fantasy convention?
Well, it was an actual Star Trek convention. And I remember, but it also had everything else, but then that was kind of like the main part because I believe Nana Visitor was there. Visitor. I remember though, like that's where I got my first poster of the Next Gen crew that was all in black and white and they were out, you know, not in uniform. It was just them as an actor that had all their names on there. And I was sort of so excited because I was like, okay, I had this whole idea that I was going to meet every single one of them and get them to sign their autographs under each of their pictures, which never happened, but. And then I also remember, like, that was the first, like, because I was, you know, X-Files was huge, and I remember that's where I got my first X-File picture. Anyways, I was, like, so excited. I'm like, ooh, I can actually buy, like, this, and I'm going to frame it, and like, this is so cool. cons haven't been a huge thing for me. Like I want to experience and go. I've been to very few, but it's like, you know, it was just harder back then, I guess. I don't know. And then I also like, you know, now that it's like such a big deal and it's kind of like, it's a lot more mainstream, you know? And so it's kind of like, I feel like there's cons everywhere. So it's not like, it's just like, oh, you have that one con that, you know, is the Oklahoma City or like that, you know, the regional one, but it's the only one time a year. And then that's basically it. And then it's like, oh, to go anywhere else, then it would have been like, oh, you have to make a huge, like, you know, at, you know, I don't even know how old I was, but you know, when I'm a teenager, it's like, I don't have the money and I'm not asking my parents to drive me to Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, I don't think our parents did that back in the day. Like, you want to go to a con, you raise your own money and get yourself there.
Pretty much, yeah. I got the same thing. And mine started out in the early 80s when I was going to comic book conventions. And I didn't really re-up to doing them until, I would say, 93 or 94. And it was a big difference because as soon as, like, you know, comic book conventions were very different, then he had story or show specific cons at that point. He had Xena and Hercules because they were out. Mm-hmm. You had Star Trek, which has been around for years, Star Wars. You had all these different ones. And then you had around the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut area, they had kind of generic ones. And, you know, there would be Monster Mania, which, span along the New England area. And then you would have Chiller Theater, which is centralized in New Jersey. And you had Fangoria and Starlog. And I always went to the Godzilla ones right around that time in the 90s. But yeah, they always had a mixture of everything, but they always focused in on the one specific subject, like you were saying, Kyle. Mm-hmm. And it has changed in a sense where it's not too catering to the specific that where you're the geek in the corner that, you know, you love this stuff and only you loved it and the sparse few amount of people. Now it's pretty much all pop culture.
Yeah.
And everybody is aware of it. And everybody goes when they go. That's why San Diego is so full up. Or even New York Comic Con.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, especially nowadays, it's like I would definitely would rather go to, like, you know, the more closer but smaller ones than actually going to Comic Con. Because I feel like, I don't like big crowds and lots of people to begin with. But it's just like, you know, that at least you can hear all the news, you see the clips, and it's kind of like you almost don't have to be in there. And I'd rather go to like a smaller one or one that's, you know, more, you know, local. And
yeah, but you don't get the smell.
Oh.
The smell is there.
I could deal without that.
They call them the sweaties for a reason.
Maybe that's why the first Comic-Con, well, not Comic-Con, but the first Walker Stalker Con I went to was set at our stock show complex. So that all you could smell was like the manure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good times.
Yeah. Well, my input would be the con in the movie reflected it pretty much properly into some degree, but they don't show someone taking the money before the fans meet the actual celebrity. In my experience, usually there's somebody right there before, but they just kind of walk straight up to them with their picture and they scribble it off, and you saw Alan Rickman is like, it's like by Grothfar. He's like, ah. You start signing it, and that's it. You don't really see the exchange of that, let alone the signs of indicating prices at the tables itself. I didn't see any of that. No money exchange anywhere to be seen, but that's, I think they just did that so that way they, you don't make it too realistic in a sense in the movie itself. But the actual interaction, for the most part, was pretty much genuine. The look and the atmosphere was the same as it is in real life, in my feeling, in the whole movie itself. And I'm old. I've been doing so many of these cons. I know the routine. So the couple for the documentary is pretty right on point. There are people that enjoy their fandom so much that they live for it and breathe it when they go to these cons, and they just embrace and love interacting with everybody else where, you know, while they're in their actual cosplay. But yeah, I think they were the most genuine out of the documentary that I saw. And when they followed them, it really, you know, seeing them pose with people and, you know, I have a memory, and this kind of focuses in on a little bit of the Star Trek lore. It was at a Fangoria con back in 1996, and my girlfriend at the time was very petite and small. She was like 4'11" and very small and quiet, but she could be really attacking you if she wanted to. But she just like clamored onto me for no reason. And I'm like, what are you afraid of? We're at a horror convention. You love horror movies. What is wrong with you? And she just like points to the guy. I'm like, what, the Trekkie? And the guy was in Spock ears in the Spock uniform. She goes, I'm afraid. I'm like, really? And that was like one of my better memories of like an encountering. But, you know, sometimes people back then thought it was strange like she did. But to me, I understood where they came from. But now it's kind of typical to see people in cosplay. And people eat it up, and people make a living out of this now too. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this movie, when it was done, they don't show that aspect because that wasn't there at that time. People just, you know, dressed up because they love the show, not to make money or do anything. And it's really kind of the difference now and then, because we're talking, what, this is 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The cosplay game was not as intense in the late 90s.
No, not really.
I don't remember, at least growing up or whatever, and the few that I went to, you know, it wasn't definitely as like what it is now, which you're right, Mark. It's like there's, you know, there's social media. There's so much like, you know, branding. Like I'm like, I'm a cosplayer, like, you know, and here's my, you know, whatever I do. And I can get an audience online because we didn't really have the internet back then. Yeah, or at least very limited to, you know, what it is now. But I thought, and one of the things, though, that I do remember was like, and they put in the movie, was like the guys there in the bathroom that were making fun of, like, you know, the con goers, and just basically is like, that's kind of how I felt when I was younger, going to my first con and being like, ooh, I'm a Trekkie. And it was like, but it's like, it wasn't something that I was just like running out there going, hey, this is, you know, I'm a Trekkie and I'm doing this. It was like, I was actually like, almost like scared to death to go, just because I was like so afraid of being like, oh,
beat up or something. Oh no.
Like, oh, everybody's gonna see me and they'll be like, oh, he's such a geek, or like whatever, nerd, blah blah blah. And yeah. So it was almost kind of like a, oh, I'm like trying to covertly do this without any of my friends or anybody knowing, and then I'm like, oh, I'm sneaking into this con.
You are a closet con goer, Kyle.
Yes, I was.
Well, obviously, you weren't in grade school and with the last name of Kirkman, and you had a Star Trek gold shirt with the gold emblem that your mother picked up for you from, like, Marshalls or something, and you wore that. You had a gold one and you had a blue one. My mother did that to me and my brother, and people would just be like, right away, it's like, ha, 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 you're funny. We're going to beat you up.
Yeah, nerd culture was not quite that popular when we were that age.
No. And it's pretty funny, though, by the mid-80s comic book collecting, you were able to get away with it because that's when the culture started getting into collecting and it became popular. So, you know, nowadays, the idea of a Comic-Con is not really a true Comic-Con now. And now it's more of a media-con than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's true a lot. Well, I think for me, I didn't really know of such things growing up. I hadn't really heard of a con or anything like that when I was a kid. And I don't know if that's just because of my parents or what, but that's why I'm really surprised. I'm like, how did you know about this, Kyle? Because I had no idea that these things even existed. And I know that they were definitely less of a thing in Oklahoma. I mean, we didn't have nearly the same amount of stuff going on that you have going on, Mark.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just...
I lived in the city area of New York, so I was one of the five boroughs. So obviously, you had Jersey, you had New York City to go to. You could go to Manhattan. Those rural areas, it was pretty much hard. You actually had to look for those, from what I was told by a lot of my friends.
Yeah. Well, if you're outside of that area of where everything is happening, then it's not happening for you. At least it wasn't as much back then. And again, not that I was aware of anyway, but I think my first convention was back when I did Geekonomicon. When was that? 2016, 14, something? I can't remember. But anyway, that was my first one. And I think that was kind of, an unrealistic expectation for me because of my experience there. It was completely not how you might expect it to be. I met a lot of people. I interviewed a lot of people. And so I can't say if that's how it typically is for conventions, because I feel like my experience was an outlying experience. But I mean, if I had known about them and been exposed to that kind of stuff, I'm sure I would have been going from way back if I had the opportunity. But yeah, I think having seen Galaxy Quest before I actually went to my first convention probably influenced how I thought it might be at a convention. And I think what you were talking about, Mark, the not showing the monetary aspect of conventions, I think that's kind of like, we don't really want to show how the sausage is made too much.
Yeah.
Because
leave it a little bit unknown so people show up. It's like, oh, darn, I have to pay.
Right. Like, oh, I can't just get a signature. You want money from me? Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I don't know that I necessarily was surprised by that or anything. I mean, probably I was surprised in, like, in one respect, but then on the other hand, I was like, oh, of course, that makes sense. Why else are they here?
Yeah.
But, yeah, not just, you know, show up for, oh, I think it'll be fun.
At least they do mention it in the bathroom scene, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but that's kind of my experience. Not really that experience with Comic-Con type things or conventions or whatever. I do really... Sincerely, it's my sincerest desire to go to Star Trek Las Vegas. Star Trek Las Vegas at some point in time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to go to, I'm told.
Yeah.
They have that whole wing.
Yep. I did, actually, when I was a long time ago, I went to Star Trek, when they actually still had the Star Trek experience. I got my picture taken with a Klingon, and I have no idea what happened to that photo, but it happened, and I was super excited about it. I know at some point in time people for some reason Trekkie became a bad word and nobody wants to be called a Trekkie anymore. I frankly don't care. I am a Trekkie and I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm taking that word back, so don't call me a Trekker, because
well, Trekker moves on. Trekkie is supposed to be the past, but my feeling is it's just Trek, and that's my feeling. I was never a huge fan, but I was always there. I grew up on the original series. I loved Next Generation. I followed all of Next Generation. I started the first two or three seasons of DS9, kind of got bored. And as soon as Voyager came, I was hook, line, and sinker with Voyager. And after that, Enterprise put a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, you should go back and watch DS9 if you have not already, because you missed out. It was phenomenal. Yeah.
There was a lot of key aspect episodes. Yes, I do believe that, but
It was really spectacular. But for me, I have loved all of it pretty much. And so I think that goes back to that whole, thing you were talking about, nerds being beaten up and taking their lunch money, all that kind of stuff, as it was back then, which is why I think people decided not to be called Trekkies. And I'm like, no, I am taking it back. Like I said, I'm taking it back. I'm using that word again, and I'm going to be proud of it because I am proud to be a geek nerd.
That's fine.
It's funny because I guess if you... This happened 10 or 15 years ago. I think somebody looked at me, and I suppose, based on my appearance, I don't come off as a big, huge nerd, but I revealed my huge nerdiness, and they were like, what? I was like, it's true, and I am not ashamed of it, because I think even as, I think probably about 15 to 17 years ago, it was just on the cusp of, it's okay to be a nerd now, you know?
Yeah.
And so back when this happened, it was still kind of like, hey, wait, she's really cool. Wait, cool people can be nerds? That kind of a thing. So I was like, that's right.
I think it's better than being called weirdo. That's what I was called. So.
I am also a weirdo, so I'm okay with that. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't it not to, you know, toot my own horn or anything like that, but it was like, I think that people had a certain expectation about that type of, or I should say, the type of person who was into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had been exposed to Dungeons and Dragons as a child, I'm sure I would have been in that game all about it. But
I was there too.
Yeah. I don't know.
In high school.
I don't know how I missed out. I mean, I was in band for crying out loud. I was a band nerd. And again, something that you don't necessarily can't tell by looking. And I guess it's that expectation of like social awkwardness or inability to relate to people or be personable or whatever that people assume is what it is to be like a Star Trek nerd. And I just was not that. And I don't really think I ever have been. Maybe when I was a teenager, but who wasn't awkward when they were a teenager?
We all were.
Kyle can tell you. He was there.
Yes, yes, I was there. I was also a band nerd.
That's right. We were a band together.
Well, Laura, what do you have?
Well, going back, since we're in the old time machine and talking about high school, I was probably across the hall from you guys and you band nerds. I was an art nerd. So I hung out in the art room all the time with other geeky artists who loved comic books, and we'd just sit and draw comics all day. So that was like my introduction to comic book and nerddom and everything. I mean, probably growing up reading my dad's many volumes of Bullfinch's Mythology didn't help either. We didn't have a lot of reading material in the house. I read that stuff. But I didn't go to a lot of cons. I did grow up going to a lot of Renfest. Kyle and Mark, yes. We'll see if that's ever a future
episode. Oh, we have a gigantic medieval fair in Norman that would have happened just this past weekend. Last weekend. Anyway, it would have just happened, but it was also canceled due to the apocalypse. So,
I know.
And I mean, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people attend this thing every year.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 3-day weekend. It started off, it's about 44. Yeah, it would have been the 44th one. Started off as a Saturday affair, and then it went to Saturday, Sunday, and then eventually it expanded to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a huge thing here, and I also went to that often. So I am right there with you.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I've been going probably since I was 13, and I'm double-checking, but I think the Colorado Renaissance Festival is probably about 45. They're definitely 40-plus years old, and they go for about... they go through like 4 or 5, maybe 6 weekends throughout the summer.
Oh,
and
really?
We're really afraid that they may cancel that or postpone it. I'm like really hoping they don't, because it's a beautiful year-round setup in the forest.
Oh, wow.
Just south of Denver. And it looks like you're in a medieval village when you go in there. So
yeah,
that was my sort of exposure to nerdy con-like things.
Ours isn't set up all year round. It's like basically put up for the weekend and then taken down again. It takes place at a park. And I only know how old it is because it's the same age as me.
Nice. Yeah.
And it's always right around my birthday. Like my birthday is April 6th, and it would have been the weekend before my birthday. So the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, but it was canceled.
Oh, gosh. We can't have those things in April because, as I told you earlier, it would probably be snowing on us.
Well, we shouldn't have it in April because anymore, I mean, it's hit or miss, honestly, but in the past couple of years, we've had really cold days in the beginning of April, but there are some times when it's not, it's beautiful weather, but usually there's at least one day where it's raining, like the entire day.
Yeah. Yeah, in New York, we've had, in Sterling Forest, New York, I've been going there since my parents took us when I was a little kid a few times, and there was one in the Cloisters
that museum.
Yeah, and me and my brother have been going ever since I've been like 13, going to the New York Renaissance Fair up in Sterling Forest, and that's been around for over 40 years, close to 50 at this point. And they do it, just like you said, Lyra, they do it from like the beginning of August, like August 6th, all the way till the close to October point, you know, almost like into October. And with that one, they actually, oddly enough, they do Time Traveler's Weekend. And you will see, of all things, Trekkies there with their shirts on, with their tricorders going around. I've seen Galaxy Quest cosplayers there as well, as well as Marty McFly, Doctor Who, everything. And it's always there. And you'd be surprised how it's changed over the years. But the coolest part that they, you know, you could do is go on a pub crawl and you go to every pub in the actual park or the fair, and you just, you, next thing you know, you're drinking next to somebody who's a time traveler or something like that. They're a Trek. And, you know, and they have other themes as well. So I've been doing that as well, just the same. It's something that I continue to do. And, but as I've gotten older, and I think over the past 8 years, I've been doing the pub crawls since they started. So that's my main gimmick, is just go there as often as I can with my friends, and we just travel around and walk around the whole village, and it's decked out perfectly. Just like you're pretty much stuck in that time and era. And it's fun to do those things. Now it's become a little bit more popular, and, you know, it still holds its value to me emotionally because I've been doing it since I was a kid, but other people have just crowd to it.
Yeah.
And it is still popular. You know, a lot of things that were at the time something that personal to you that was, you know, has become a little bit more popular. And that's the whole thing about pop culture.
Yeah. Same thing with cons, you know, I'm sure they used to just belong to the nerds and now they belong to the world.
They do. So you got the football player who, you know, the jock who's like, oh, I'm into that too. And it's not just the guy who, you know, got straight A's and was always in the library reading books.
Yeah. When we first started going, well, this would be the last of the Ren Faire talk, but when we first started going, it was all bikers and hippies. And yeah, now it's everyone. They had to pave the roads with cobblestone so people could bring their like jogging strollers with their babies.
Oh my.
Did they
dress the strollers up at least to look like horses?
So there's not as many cosplayers as there used to be, but my girls like to go dressed up almost every year.
Yeah, I have a costume. That's right.
I'm getting my costume ready. Even if they cancel it, I'm going to get my costume ready.
Just hang around the house, drink, have some, you know, get some mead, put it in a nice glass.
Exactly. So as far as cons go, I've been obviously to Walker Stalker with you, Mark. We've been to one together in Atlanta. I've been to the one here the one time Walker Stalker came to Colorado. And they for some reason set up the con at our stock show complex down here, which is just a bad place for a con, in my opinion, because that's where they have like the country's biggest stock show every year, and the place smells like horses and manure. And I felt bad for the stars when they came. Like, no wonder so many people dropped out of this con. And then I've been to a couple of small, I've been to the Denver Comic Con and a few others here, but the stars in Galaxy Quest are so indifferent to the fans, and I was just wondering, is that indicative of the time period? Because you don't see that much anymore. I mean, they really try and play up the fans nowadays.
They become a lot more involved. They acknowledge that the fans make them where they are. Whereas back then, it was, and they showed in the documentary with Shatner when he does the SNL skit.
Yeah.
Get a life. What's wrong with you? You know, those that attitude. And, you know, and they actually kind of, you know, and the way that Tim Allen represents Jason in the actual movie is pretty much almost a depiction of Shatner as that character and of Shatner himself to some degree.
I would be so interested to know what Shatner thinks of the movie.
Yeah.
Ruthie would have known if she asked that question to him when she got a chance to speak.
Except I didn't have a chance to speak. I was just there to see.
Next time there's a con, somebody needs to go up and ask him that question.
Or ask him on Twitter.
That's the thing. Twitter, he's very active on Twitter, but I don't know if he seems to really stay away from anything fan related. It's more of just like
promotion.
Yeah, or just, yeah, or just commenting on just, you know, somebody attacking him or whatever. It's like, it's, I don't think he really responds to fans on Twitter. Or like in that format, but all right, well, let's go on to the next topic, and this is about on the Galaxy Quest, the movie. It's a celebrity aspect, and what it's like in reality to how it was depicted in the movie. And we kind of touched a little bit of, you know, on this already, but I've only been to a few cons before, so it's like, you know, I've never really met or did any of the meet and greets. And I kind of get that maybe nowadays, obviously, it's like, at least I know from, you know, some of your experiences, Mark, that you've told me about, it's like, that's like, it's not that way. I don't know if it was like, you know, the actors and, you know, any of the famous people like are really like want, you know, the fans to be coming up to them and talking to them and all that kind of stuff. But it's like when I, you know, growing up though, it's like, I just like, you know, I was too scared to like actually go up to anybody famous because I thought, oh, I'd be bothering them. And actually, it's kind of like that's how I handled it myself with dealing with famous people. Like, I would rather it just happen naturally. And at least for me, it's like in my experience, it's like I lived in LA for a couple of years, and there it's like you're in Hollywood, you know, you're in where that's their home, their work environment, blah, whatever, this and that. I never wanted to be that fan that was just like, oh my gosh, let me attack you here. I want a picture, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I just wanted it to be kind of like more natural. And so, yeah, like, for me, it's like, that's how I was. And so I never, but this is outside of like being in a con. So when his reaction, I kind of felt like, okay, well, I mean, I don't think that that's exactly how it is, but obviously, the movie portrayed this a little different because he was a good actor, you know, and like, you know,
a this proper actor. I did Shakespeare.
Right.
Patrick is the third.
Yeah.
There were five curtain calls.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's like, I don't know. Like, to me, I'm like, I took that as being kind of like playing in on the character in the show and just what was going on and not actually being something like real, like, you know, that's exactly what would happen. I don't know if that necessarily happens there, but you know, it's like I went on and it was like I always took, and actually I guess part of it though is like I'm a very like introvert anyways. So it's like, I don't want to like, I'm not much of an instigator or like, I'm going to put myself in front now. So like, if I was in a con situation, I would feel almost like I would be too scared to go do it, even if I paid him money. Because I'd be like, wait, no, I'm like, I'm bothering you. Or like, I don't, you know, it's like, I don't feel like this is actually real.
Like a roller coaster that you don't want to get on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, but like in my experience and the way I've been, you know, like when I've met famous people, which I've met several, that it's just like, it's always been in situations where it's like, oh, I'm just either in the same spot, we're hanging out in the same place. Like, I went to the Boom Boom Punk Jam in Dallas, like, oh, I don't know how many forever years ago, but my friends knew the drummer and Thrice, and also they knew some of the guys in Blink 182, and this was way years ago. So that we got backstage access, whatever. So we were just in the back hanging out, whatever. And then Tony Hawk pops in, and like I have a picture with me and Tony Hawk, but it was like not like I was there as a fan. It was just like, oh, it just happened. And so I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome. Good to I didn't have to be like, oh my gosh, can I have a picture? It was just like, oh no, we're just hanging out. And it's like, oh, hey, let's take a pic. Yeah. Drew Barrymore is the same way, which if Drew, you're listening, which I doubt she is. Like, I met her when I worked at Ralph Lauren at the Beverly Center in Hollywood. And I was just like worked in like, you know, like there you can, when you're a salesperson, you can like, you're basically just trying to get somebody to buy something from you so you can get the commission. But she happened to be in the store and I just knew someone told me she was there and I just kind of try to play it off to be like, oh, can I help you, miss? And then she turned around and I made a stupid like, Drew, Drew Barrymore, and like just said, oh, if you need any help, you know, I kind of played it off and then just like, okay, that's it. That's my experience. But then I ended up meeting her like a couple of weeks later at a coffee shop and she remembered my name. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am friends with Drew Barrymore. But I mean, it was like, that's, I don't know. It's like, that's how I've always been and how I would react. So being in a con situation, you know, it's like, I almost, that's the reaction that I would be like afraid to have because like I don't want to have that interaction with them because that's what I would expect them to do. So I don't know. Yeah. I thought it was interesting, but if that's reality, yeah, I'll maybe you guys can like, you know, fill us in on that experience.
Like in a con concept or in real life?
No, in a con concept of like how he reacted, he was just like, I don't want to deal with you, even though.
Yeah, yeah, like grabbing the picture and then just signing it and just next.
Right.
I think it depends on the person, honestly.
It does depend on the person, yeah, it does. I've encountered that a few times, and that leads me into mine, which will be, you know, doing this for over 26 years, you know, from dirt cons, more respectable ones, I've seen a lot of stuff, honestly. I think the funniest thing I ever heard saw was I overheard Lori Holden from X-Files on Walking Dead fame state to one of the helpers, and she didn't think anybody was listening, but it says, get me out of here. I'm tired, and I can't take this anymore. And I've seen her where – and I spoke to her where she was extremely pleasant. I think it's just the time and day and how they are. The cons do take a toll on you, and I – guess as a celebrity, you're kind of stuck there pigeonholed in this table and you have to deal with all these people and they're constantly, and yeah, it is their job and to some degree, and this is extra, but there were, like you were saying earlier with a lot, and Lyra was saying, it's like they're very open and they love their fans because they do realize without the fans, they wouldn't be there. And I think that's the difference between now and then. But when I saw Lori Holden say this, this was, you're talking during X-Files times. You know, this was at a, I think, a Starlog convention in Manhattan. And that was more sci-fi fantasy based. And I'm showing my age when I say Starlog because Starlog was out in the 80s. And that's what everybody used to, you know, read along with Fangoria. But, you know, it's, but sometimes you have an experience that's pretty cool at the con itself. And I have one that's pretty funny. I don't know if you guys remember David Naughton, and he was the lead in the American Werewolf in London. Yes. So he just comes walking up at the urinal, and he looks up and goes, hey, man. I was like, hey. I'm like, oh, hi. You're not going to get hairy on me, are you? And he goes, no, no, no full moon tonight. And I said, well, you know, drink a Dr. Pepper. You might feel better for the rest of the day. And he goes, oh my God, you're showing your age. he goes, not many people remember that because that's how he got his career started. He started as a Dr. Pepper kid in the ad. And, I went back to his booth. I don't know if I still have the autograph still or not. That was way back when, but, I wound up buying that particular one because he says nobody buys them. But he and I talked a little bit, and it was kind of casual and comfortable, at least. In real life, when you see certain people, the only person I could say that I actually got to talk to was Robert Vaughn, and I don't know if anybody remembers the man from Uncle or the bad guy from Superman 3 or the A-Team, but I got to know Robert, and he could come off as crass, really, really a not pleasant person to speak to, but he gets kind of uncomfortable fast and doesn't know how to react. And he comes off a little bit pompous, but I got to know him. And for a while when he was living in Ridgefield, Connecticut with his wife and his daughter, I got to know them and I got some Oscar screeners just befriending them and being nice to them. And I got to know Robert a little bit. And the one thing you wouldn't think about the actor is what they love the most is, like, with him, he was known for Spies and, you know, I forget the name of the movie that he was in about the car, But, and then on top of that, you know, everybody thought the A-Team in Superman 3, but he loved the cowboy stuff. But, you know, it's like you catch him on a good day and a bad day, and that's in real life. I've met a few other people. I've met James Earl Jones, and I was told never approach him or ask him for an autograph out in the middle of the street because he lives in my town. And I, you know, it's funny how my mother, not a huge fan, she just knows him from, oh, you were in Coming to America, you were in this or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were in there for physical therapy like 3 or 4 times, and they struck up a huge conversations. It was pretty funny. And, you know, I said, I picked her up and I said, hi, Mr. Jones, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he was in a good mood that time. And my friend Kelly, who had a brother, her brother worked for him, and he did all the autographs. I have not, and still to this day, have not asked for, like, can I get an autograph of James Earl Jones? And I would never ask that of him. You know, I would be like, all right, if he offered it, it would be nice. But the thing is, like, is that you could catch people. They're just normal people like you and I. They have their off days. And I think that was just an off day, and it was over exaggerated about him. Oh, this is not my craft. I was just known for this. I did Shakespeare, you know, but, I don't see that as much, but there are some people that I think, Jason from Walking Dead cast would actually agree, because he had to deal with Laurie Holden, and he had an interesting story about her, about what Greg Nicotero said. It's like, I guess she was hard to work with, but I guess it also depends on the time and day, you know.
Yeah.
Well. People are different. They're different in different moments and different lights.
Yeah.
If you caught me before coffee, I'd probably rip your head off.
Exactly, right?
I agree with that.
Catch me before I had my beer.
It was like, if it's too early, then yeah, do not be talking to me or you will get cut.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. Again, that's kind of how, like, I've, like, just... with famous people, I it's like I don't want to be that fan that just like attacks them. I know it's like if they're there, it's like, oh, this is my job, like I'm, you know, like this is what I'm doing and whatever. It's like I've always just like James Earl Jones, if we were in the same town and he lived there, I'd be walking down the street, and if I saw him, I'd be like, oh, hey, James, how are you doing? Like, literally, never met him, whatever. I'd just be like, I would still call him by his first name and just say, hey, you're cool. And then he'll remember being like, that weird guy, I have no idea, just called me by my first name.
I always called him Mr. Jones. And he actually asked me, he goes, what are your top 3 movies that I actually acted in? Now, everybody usually says Coming to America.
I said Hunt for October.
Yep, that too, or they automatically say Star Wars, but he never acted, and he'll be like, right. I have to correct people when they say Star Wars, because I only did the voice. And then Conan the Barbarian. He goes, oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
Alan Quatermain. And he just looked at me. He's like, oh, my God. I was like bringing up a really weird off nerd movies.
Alert.
What?
I said nerd alert.
Yeah, and he started laughing. He had a bust. He had a like a big laugh about it. So he was just like, oh, "Okay, gotcha. You got me."
That's funny.
But the thing is that usually they expect certain things. But it wasn't a nerd alert. A lot of people don't even. A lot of the guys I work with that are younger than I am didn't even know that he was in Conan the Barbarian. They only remember him as, like, the voice of Darth Vader, Mufasa, or Coming to America.
Yeah.
So, all these things.
Yeah, I think the voice thing is probably what I... Because I would have probably immediately said, like, The Hunt for October, maybe Patriot Games, because I think he was in that, too. Because those are the two. But then I'd also probably be like, oh, yeah, you're the voice of Meet the Press at the intro.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's how much... Yeah, I'm a political junkie, so... I watch that show.
They're just regular people and just treat them as such. The conventions are a way to actually just express your fandom and appreciation, and they benefit from it. So, like I said, sometimes you have a good day, they have a good day, and sometimes they have a bad day.
Yep. And that's all.
Richard Hatch actually had one, and he was shocked because he had a medical condition, and he had a hard time breathing and everything else, and Robert Picardo is right near him. So I went in the tent and I ran to where it's kind of like a bar or something. I grabbed two bottles of water and I handed them to Richard Hatch's wife at the time. This is before he passed away, obviously. And he played Apollo in Battlestar Galactica. And I said, here you go. And she goes, let me pay. I was like, no. Take care of him. And they're just regular people. He was having an attack. He didn't have his medication in time or something. And they really appreciated it. And I later on, when I came back around, she grabbed me and she wanted to talk. So I talked to him. He was in better condition and everything else. But the thing is they're just regular people too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have their things too. And like you said, they have, like I said too, you know, they have their good days and they have their bad days. And this apparently was Alan Rickman's character's bad day.
No doubt. I think for me, like I said earlier, my experience in Geekonomic Con kind of spoiled me for the rest of my life. I expect every con to be like this. And I'm not quite sure if it was, I'm certain it was a combination of things, but the way that they had set up where the celebrities were going to be was a bit awkward, I guess. They kind of had a second floor setting where they thought that everybody would come and sign autograph, or, you know, stand in line to sign autographs. So they had all this stuff taped off, all these lines, all these areas, and you walk up there and it's like crickets. No one is there. All these people are sitting at their tables going, where are all the people? And again, you know, this is a business venture for them. So a lot of them are there in order to, make money. And if they're not making money, then they're not going to want to come back. And anyway, so they did some rearranging on the second day. But on the first day, because of this, I was able to walk up to so many people and say, hey, we have a podcast booth downstairs. Would you like to come and do an interview? We would love to interview you. And because of that, I was able to interview so many people. And my personal favorite, Greg Grunberg, who, I mean, if you know who that guy is, he's like a geek's geek, you know? I mean, he's best friends with J.J. Abrams, and
he was an Alias.
Oh my gosh, he was an Alias. He's been in probably every single thing that J.J. Abrams has ever done. He throws Greg Grunberg in there for at least a little bit.
The Star Wars.
He was a pilot in Lost. Okay, so there you go.
That too.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was like on the inside, I'm like, like totally fangirling out. But on the outside, I'm like, hey man, cool. Would you like to come do this podcast? And of course, he was the first interview that we had, and he kind of set the tone for the rest of the weekend. We got so many interviews. We talked to so many people, and it was just amazing. And I, again, like Mark said, they're just people. And I just walked up to him and said, hey, man, how you doing? What's going on? Would you like to do this? If you have time, we would love it if you came and talked to us. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of them, and I was actually surprised at the number of people who did, agree to talk to us. And if I may say so myself, it was because I went up and asked them. So yeah, it was super cool. And that, I think that experience primed me to actually be able to, just go up and talk to Nana Visitor and ask her, hey, I would love to do an interview with you. And sometimes you gotta know what you're dealing with, and they have handlers and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you need to go talk to the handler, to do that kind of a thing. But it's just, I think sometimes it is like, how it was depicted in the movie, but then, you know, I think Mark kind of nailed it on the head. They have good days and bad days. And
sometimes a little bit exaggerated. That's all about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think the ability to be a diva is certainly there. But I think that a lot of them sort of know what they're getting into when they sign up to do a convention. Like, they understand that
their butt's going to get pinched.
Well, I don't think anyone expects that. But
Jeffrey Dean Morgan does.
I think when people, when they sign up to go to these things, they sort of know what they're getting into and what they're agreeing to, as in a certain respect, they're going to be sort of like that, they're signing up to be kind of stared at and gawked at a little bit. And I think they kind of understand that. But for some people, that's might be the only experience they ever have with a famous person. And so I think sometimes they realize that as well. And I think the majority of the people, anyway, in my experience were really gracious and just, you know, and you have a chat with them about something that they did that they have no idea, because let's face it, that was probably like 20 or 30 years ago. They certainly don't remember, but it made a huge impression on you. And so, you know, I think you also have to be gracious when they don't necessarily say, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I remember talking to Tim Russ and he was in this, I don't know how many people saw this thing, but it was like a behind the scenes thing for Voyager. And it was like in this behind the scenes thing, they had a, sort of a funny goof kind of a thing, sort of outtakes sort of a thing where, and there was this one scene where he gets killed in this one scene. And obviously it wasn't a forever death, but in this particular scene, in this outtake, he did this exaggerated death scene. I'm sure he had no idea what I was talking about, but I was thrilled about it. I thought it was hilarious. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I told him about it, and I'm sure he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But, you know, he chuckled and said, oh, yeah, yeah, and blah, blah, blah. You know, but I mean, so I think the graciousness, I think, has to go both ways. Like, we can't expect, I mean, these are real people. We can't expect them to be exactly how we think they're going to be because we've watched them on TV for X number of years or whatever, you know? So,
yeah.
But I think it's just, I mean, really, they are just people, you know, just.
They put on their pants one leg at a time.
Yeah. I think I will say the thing that surprised me the most was how short most of them were. I was not expecting that.
Really?
Yes. All the people I talked to, I was like, wow, you're like 3 inches taller than me, and I'm 5'4".
Yeah, I found that too.
And I think the tallest person that I met was Vincent M. Ward, you guys might remember. He actually is a large person. Greg Grunberg is also a semi-large person. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Vincent M. Ward, I was like, wow, you really are this tall. But I met so many other people that I was like, wow, you're so not as tall as I thought you would be.
Yeah, look at Stallone. He wore lifts when he was in Rocky. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Well, either they're all short and you don't know, or they put them on a box or something and you don't know.
They're really tall, and you're like, hi.
Yeah.
Looking up.
Yeah. But I mean,
with actors, there's an optimum height for them to be so that when they're in scenes with other actors, they don't have to maneuver the camera to get them both in frame.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
so they don't want them too tall because then they always have to have the camera way back here so that they can be in frame with their co-stars.
Yeah, exactly. They're either all short, and that's why all the ones I met were short, except for Vincent and Ward, or they're doing clever things with like boxes and, you know.
Or when you do see them, they're wearing cowboy boots with like 3-inch lifts. Like, I felt so short in front of Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery when I first met them and hung out. I was like, I got a photo op. And I'm like, you guys aren't really that tall. And I'm like, I'm like, really? And they're like, what? Where? I was like, oh, sorry, dude. Making me look short. We can slouch down.
Yeah. None of the ones I saw were wearing lifts at all. Even the girls. The girls were just as short as the guys. But the guys that, I mean, they were all short. And I was like, wow.
Or how randy they could be when they have a few drinks at the actual con itself.
Yes, I got hit on, and Daryl and Troy can tell you who it was. I can't remember, but they were in protective dad mode because this guy was completely hitting on me. And they were like, it was like an immediate thing. I could see it in their faces, and I'm like, hey, man, I know how to deal with drunk guys. I'm fine. But it was funny. It was really funny. I can't remember who it was, but it was some celebrity guy who was like, hey, because, you know, I mean, we're trapped in our little booth. We have our headphones and mics on, and we're like, hey, rah, 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 rah. And he's like, hey, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, I felt weird when Sarah Connor actually touched my thigh. She struck my thigh. I was like, no, you're drunk. Go home.
No one actually touched my thigh, but
well, it was weird. I was like, wow, I got to finally get to see Linda Hamilton, and it's like, oh, come around, sit next to me, and I feel a hand on my thigh stroke, and I'm like, what is going on?
What's happening here? What do I
do? You had a problem with this, Mark?
No, all right. Why?
I was like afraid I was going to get a chubby or something. But I was like, oh my goodness. But I found out later on, because my friend who was behind me with his wife, she did the same thing to him. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't feel so bad.
She's just extra friendly when she's had a few.
Equal opportunity.
And his wife was like, yeah, I think she had a bit too much to drink with the girls from summer school, because they had the cast from summer school there. But it's like, it's interesting experiences when you go to cons, everybody. So we always recommend them. Always have fun with them.
Yeah.
And you won't get some of those experiences, trust me. Some of them will be really cool, and some will be like, what was that?
Yeah. I think, too, like, depending on, I mean, I think, Mark, you said something about them being trapped behind a desk or something for the entire time.
Yeah, table.
Yeah, I think I've seen at least a few times I've seen where they actually schedule themselves time to walk around and sort of get to see see what's going on outside of their own little table. So I think that's definitely a good idea for them to do. If I were ever a celebrity handler, I would definitely suggest that they schedule themselves time to be available outside of, like, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you meet up with them at the bar, or they're outside having a smoke. You know, Williams Forsythe actually bummed a cigarette from me. Mm-hmm. And then about an hour later, I saw him, we're hanging out. I'm sitting at the bar. He goes, hey, man, what's up? How's the game going? I'm like,
what?
Oh, hi. Is this drink on you? You buying it? He's like, no.
Nice.
But, you know, sometimes they're approachable. They're just who they are. Some of them are just friendly. But, yeah, like I said, you know, they exaggerated a little bit, probably too much in the movie in some degree. But, you know, it's hit or miss.
Traumatic effect or license.
Yeah. And Alan Rickman played it off properly.
Yeah, yes, he did.
If they had a con nowadays and I could see Alan Rickman, I would be the first one in line, because that's mainly the reason I watched this film, because I am a huge Alan Rickman fan, and I've seen a good deal of his filmography, but I still have more to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned the handlers, Mark. Is that, I'm wondering if that's a new thing, or if when they did this movie in the 90s, if it was a thing just to go up to the movie star and hand them the money.
They always had somebody escort them. Yeah. Even in the 90s, there was always somebody escorting them from their room to the table, and then anywhere outside. Unless you were William Forsythe and like to go outside into court in the actual courtyard of the hotel where he's actually staying in anyway, where the con is, and be in your robe and smoke a cigar and hang out with a bunch of fans that, you know, I've seen some interesting things at cons. Lori Petty literally sat at her table. She literally woke up in her slippers, in her pajamas, and came down and had her robe on and just was signing autographs and taking pictures like that. Those are the certain things, but, you know, that's Lori Petty and that's Tank Girl.
I mean, how they depicted them in the show, in the movie, it seemed like they were just like they were at the bottom of the barrel because they're at an appliance store opening. And nobody's even approaching them hardly. You know, they can walk back to their van without being accosted at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably because the way they were portraying it in the movie is that they were has-beens, and nobody pays attention. Nobody really pays attention to that. And, you know, they're not the modern celebrity, but even with people who have older celebrity, they still have somebody that's handling them or watching out for them and walking them to and from. Right. And sometimes as they get older, like Julie Newmar, let's say, she could be taken advantage of like just taking pictures with people haphazardly. Mm-hmm. Or Adam West, when I met him, no, he had always had somebody with him. And Burt Ward, actually, when I talked to him, we were just talking about dogs because he loves, you know, helping out the large dog community with his, they have like natural ingredients into the dog food that him and his wife have with their company. And he won't, you know, have people just come up and, you know, I'll sign that. No, he won't. If you approach the person nicely, they will do so, but Julie is very gullible. But they still try to keep somebody with them. I saw that happen once when I saw Haru Nakajima, who played the original Godzilla. We were all waiting in line for him, but his hotel room was down the hall, but nobody came to get him. He woke up because it was already tea time, so he had a smoking room, so he had his cigarette and he had his tea, as he normally does, but he comes walking out. Nobody was there to help him. So my friend Mark, who is like 6'3", and I stopped a bunch of people going, hey, hey, hey. And then finally the handler came running down the hallway because everybody was just trying to get him to sign stuff and take pictures because he didn't know better. He was in his 80s. So, but yeah, they are not, it's been like that even since the 90s. I'm not sure about the 80s though.
Mm-hmm.
They might have spruced it up because of people knowing about more of celebrity and everything. That's why certain actors have a price tier for their autographs or photo op or things of that mm-hmm. nature.
Yeah, I haven't met a whole lot of fans in my time, but I just think that celebs now are much more aware of the power of their fans.
Oh yeah,
and especially with social media and how they can, like, you know, motivate their fans to go to their movies and do all these things. So you've got the fans who are real, like the Chris Hemsworths or Norman Reeduses of our time, who have basically made a huge career off of their fandom, and their fan, you know, they snap their fingers and their fandom will do whatever they want. So they've really realized the power of that. Yeah. I don't think in this day and age we have the Marlon Brandos who are like, I don't have time for you. I am an actor, which I believe was Alan Rickman's character, you know. I am an artist. I don't have time for this.
Well, at least he didn't do his scenes in just the top part and just wear his underwear like Marlon Brando did.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a good point, though, too. It's like, even when this show, or, you know, the movie was on, like, the world, like, the internet was still such a very, like, not a big thing that it was, you know, it is now, you know? I mean, it was just coming around, you know?
Social media was just coming about at that time.
Right, but it was not, like, where it is today. And it's like,
no.
You know, I think actors and actresses today, like, they are definitely more linked into that as another outlet of how to, like, talk to their fans. Because it's almost kind of like, you know, cons were definitely a way for fans to be able to access their, you know, their fandom. And now it's like you can do all that online, almost, you know, messaging them on Instagram or, like, liking something or, like, commenting and all that stuff. So it's kind of interesting how a lot of that has expanded and changed. Because we didn't have any of that growing up. It was just like, you either go and you might get to meet them, or you just, you know, could dream. And
I will recall my one great celebrity moment, though, and it was when I was in college. I was working as an intern for Marvel Comics, and I was just sitting in my editor's office, like, thumbing through some comic books or whatever, and I just heard a big group of people walking behind me, and I turn around and Stan Lee walks into the office. He was visiting from California, just wanted to check out the office and see who was in there. And at the time I was working for Ralph Macchio, who did a lot of the big name comics at Marvel, the Avengers, Captain America, Daredevil, etc. And he just comes in and he's talking to Ralph, and they kind of ignore me, but he came in, and Ralph had this file folder system of about, you know, 3 files stacked up. And Stan must have at least been in his 60s or something at that time. He hopped right on top of the file cabinet, sat up there, and told us the story about when he used to work at Marvel and would sit up on those same file cabinets playing his flute. And then he looked over me at little 19-year-old me and said, hey, Ralph, you got a cute intern there. So I was and enchanted, and he endeared me for the rest of his life, for the rest of my life to Stan Lee.
That's awesome. All right. Well, let's continue on. Let's talk more about the documentary. Sure. And like how the movie impacted fans that loved the movie and their representations within cons. Cause this was kind of like a world within a world of conventions and fandom. So, I mean, I kind of like, if you weren't a fan of Star Trek, then I don't know how you couldn't be a fan of this movie. Cause obviously this was the thread through the whole entire, you know, movie. It was just a reflection of basically the world, you know, of Star Trek. But I'm also, it's like, I like how, like, the documentary reflected about how fans relate to their universe and its characters. And it's just like how that connection bonds us all together. Just with the actors, the conventions, you know, this whole entire universe. It's like, it's not just necessarily about Star Trek, but it is kind of a, you know, just a look, and also we're getting the behind the scenes of the movie, but the movie overall is just about the fans and fandom, but it could relate to anything, you know. It can be, you know, Xena Warrior Princess, you know. It can be, you know, like, you know, what else is going on? Like The Flash, because, you know, like, you know,
Supernatural or any of those shows. Yep.
Yeah. Well, it was Greg Berlanti. He was a creator of Arrow and Flash. He was, you know, a commentator on the documentary. But I loved like that part of like how, you know, it just showed how something as simple as like that universe or whatever, like how this one show or whatever can like impact so many people's lives in such a unique way. And I thought that was illustrated a lot, like in just the documentary about this movie, and, you know, getting all the fans of the show, but actually fans of Star Trek, or just anything, you know, talking about like how this, you know, had that impact on them, and like now that, you know, almost everywhere, like, and how it's celebrated.
Well, I'd like to add to that, and I have to agree with you, Kyle. The movie definitely is like a love letter to all Trek fans and fandom. You know, that, you know, that it basically revolved all around that, all the way from the NTE, whatever it was, based on the ship, to the reactionary thoughts of the fans, how Jason acted in the show and the way he acted towards his co-stars, kind of similar to Shatner. It's kind of like reminiscing. And if they did this, and I think Brent Spiner said it perfectly in the documentary, that could have been us. Mm-hmm. That they should have just did us with this movie, and it would have been perfect. The documentary depicted everything perfectly regarding that.
Yeah, I have to second that and also agree. I think, I don't know how you can not be a fan of this movie if you like Star Trek even a little bit. Also, I can't remember what year it was, but there was some Thanksgiving some years back, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. Time blurs for me. Anyway, I made my family watch Galaxy Quest, and I think I enjoyed it more than they do. Or more than they did. But I was like, you guys have to watch this movie. It's so great. And I'm not quite sure that they really, I mean, I know that they thought it was funny, but I don't think that they got all of the inside jokes, you know, like I did, and all of the things that made it so, so funny to people who are true fans of Star Trek. But I like the documentary aspect of it because it's like meta inside meta inside meta. It's like they are fanning over a movie that's about fanning. And, it's so great. I think it's just a great look back. And it was really fun looking at the documentary. It was really fun seeing how so many people who are like, when you're talking about nerd fandom, that's me. You're talking to me. I'm a nerd fan.
I'm the odd one out because I don't know much about Star Trek. I know Professor X is Jean-Luc Picard. And I know Captain Kirk. And I know Spock. I know this thing, the hand symbol. and I've seen some of the next generation. I almost said the first generation. But but I just liked how they treated the fandom, that they didn't pander to them. They didn't look down upon them either. And I loved in the documentary how they said that originally they wanted to take the whole fan portion of the movie out. And it just wouldn't have been the same movie if it hadn't been for that, because this is probably one of the first movies to like truly appreciate fans and show like how their love for something, whether it's Galaxy Quest or Star Trek or fantasy or a book series or anything, can just really propel that property into another level. You know, it really is the fans that create those things.
Yeah. I mean, at the end, like whenever they were like showing some of the fans and like going to the screening that was like whatever the local theater in that area. But, you know, it was like just showing the fans like coming to celebrate a show that was, you know, however many years it's been, you know, like what, 20 something years since it, you know, came on. But then, you know, like the producer, the director, everybody there coming out, and then he said, it's like, oh, they turned the light on. And then we just like looked down. And it's like, oh, you know, there's people dressed up as like, you know, characters in the movie. And it was like, how ironic that we're watching a film about, you know, a film about fans at a screening with fans dressed up as characters in this film. You know, it was like total, like this meta, like Inception, where it just got deeper and deeper and deeper. But it just, like, you know, it's like it was just a great reflection of just specifically, yes, in the kind of the Trek sci-fi, you know, genre, but really this relates to all genres. And it's just like, you know, that's what fans are, you know, it's like they love, you know, artists' work, you know, and they love, like, you know, there's this, I think one of them said, like, you know, this symbiotic nature between the artist and the fan, and just like how beautiful that is, because that's what they do their job for. That's what, you know, artists create for. And this part of the documentary was just like so on point. It was awesome.
Yeah. And that one, I remember there was a film critic who was, he was talking about when he initially saw the movie, his first thought was, okay, I see what you guys are going to do here. Thinking, you know, himself being a nerdy fan, thinking that they were going to, it was going to be a whole movie making fun about nerdy fans, but that wasn't it at all. And then he went to a party and said, told all his friends, you have to go watch this movie, you know, kind of a thing. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And it was great to see how you know, the fans saved the crew in actuality, and just paralleling that with how fans can save a show. You know, I highly doubt that The Walking Dead would have been such a huge success if it wasn't for all the fans telling everyone they know, this show's amazing, you have to watch it, and just going nuts over it.
Yeah, that's totally the truth. Because I mean, we've seen that in many other like different shows. I think I could be wrong, but what was the show that? Well, actually, that's happened like with Amazon with what's the show? What's the show that was on Sci-Fi that got
The Expanse?
The Expanse, yeah. And so, like, you know, I guess, you know, they dropped it, but then there was such a huge fan, like, support about, hey, take this, you know, we need to get the show back. And then, of course, Amazon picked them up. And so now they're doing their deal. And it's like, I know several shows throughout history, we've seen that, where the fans basically said, no, it's like, we want this. And so they finally see that, hey, there's a huge demand for this, and, you know, pick up shows that they cancel. That, you know, I thought an interesting thing about the show, or about the documentary too, is that they, like, talking about the suits, talking about, like, all the hierarchy and all the bureaucracy that comes on, like, after the artists and, like, everything has been made, you know, we're seeing this experience that they're having, saying how wonderful this was, like, this, how getting this group of actors together, you know, it's like, this thing was like, what do they say? It's like, you know, this, when do you ever get, like, lightning in a bottle? You know, it's like, everything just worked out and it was just wonderful. But then here it goes. It's like marketing. It's like, oh, we have the Rugrats movie, you know, coming out, and it's Christmas, you know, it's like, you know, it was surprising to find out that there was so much cussing in the original part, you know, before they, you know, edit it. Like, you know, like, I don't ever really remember, recall hearing that before. But then, of course, what we saw was a very, you know, much more PG, just like, you know, more family-oriented film in that regard. But then also, I'm kind of glad that they did do that, which, you know, it's like, they did say that it's like, you know, like, having that cut out, it opened it up for, you know, a much more broader family, younger, you know, audience. But I'm also, it's like, I don't know what it would have been like if it was completely just like Aliens 3, where the director switch was in the middle of the movie, and then all of a sudden it's like they use the F-bomb in, like, the whole entire rest of the movie. And it's like, and you can see it. And so it's like, and it to me, it's like, it was such a shut off because it's like, I can only, you know, I'm kind of getting tone deaf to cussing now, but it's like, it's almost kind of like, if that was there, I think it would have kept been like, you know, it's almost kind of like, was that necessary to how, you know, the movie is, that it's just like, it's freaking perfect. You know, like, exactly. there was no need to have any kind of cussing or anything, you know, it's like, or it nudity. Like, that would have been, that would not been the true to the show, so I'm glad. Yeah.
I think it's better as a family friendly type movie, yeah, for sure.
Well, in Star Trek's that way, you know, it's not like we, you know, older Star Trek, now that it's on streaming, they are taking a little bit more liberty with their language, which, thank goodness, they only did it a couple times in Picard.
I think all TV at this point takes a lot of liberty in their what they could say or do now.
Well, yeah. TV that's not broadcast has more freedom to do what they feel like they want to or what they feel like they can. But I still maintain that just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, yeah, same here. It's within the taste and in the context of what they're doing within the story.
But nobody asked me.
All right. Well, let's go to our last topic with the documentary again. And it's the Star Trek connection based on the documentary and how they are connected. You know, fans of the movie based on a movie about fans of Star Trek like shows. I mean, I kind of like Trek is just one of the few pop culture things. And I mean, I guess like Star Wars, but maybe it might have been the first kind of obscure thing that just permeated society in so many ways. Just in the end, it's like because of the fandom of Star Trek, it's like they, if I'm wrong, you know, do correct me, but like I don't ever, or I, at least I don't recall a time, at least not talk about recent history, like or the recent few years, but like of previous. But like Star Trek was such a big, huge, like pop cultural phenomena that it's like they named space shuttles after the Enterprise. You know, they named aircraft carriers after the Enterprise. Like there's a lexicon and also like, you know, like stuff is being like honored, I think. And
or copied. Look at our tablets, our phones, everything's a tricorder in some respect.
Or, yeah, no, that's like, you know, it's, you know, in that way, I don't know. It's like, you know, I feel like Trek was definitely the first, but then they that's what's carrying on to, like, you know, a lot of other different shows and stuff like that. So it's like, I don't know. I think it's like, I think that even if you're not a Trekkie, it's like you can relate just because it's such a human, like, connection story. You know, it's like.
Definitely. Well, honestly, I just love that they not only included the Trek, but other things that influenced, you know, kind of like sci-fi stuff, and especially within the movie itself, the Thunderbirds, the puppets, and how the Thermians walked, and all that stuff, all those different elements that were grabbed, and that was from the actors. That wasn't even from the actual script. That wasn't even something that was there originally. And on top of that, you know, with the documentary and how, you know, they originally squids or something. No, they were squids, but somebody came in on set and wanted to change. I guess they were executive producer or something, and they wanted to change it to what they look like in Close Encounters. Mm-hmm. So it's just like they stuck to their gut when it came to the actual movie, but they took a lot of, like, the track. They took a lot of the sci-fi influences and just ran with it. And then it obviously gave it that human element. I just love how they combined everything within the movie. And then the documentary showed that human element between the interaction of, you know, the fans as well as, you know, the actors themselves. Because they look at it really, really with, like, great thoughts and everything.
Yeah, it's like, one of my favorite quotes from the documentary is when Will Wheaton, like, he was, like, at the end, he was saying, being a fan is not how you love it, it's the way you love it.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, him saying that, it's like, when you think about it, so, well, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm like, I'm a fan of Star Trek, but I think I'm a huge fan of Star Trek and of this show is because it's like how I get emotional at certain scenes, you know, it's like, maybe kind of how, like, you might critique, like, another show, i.e. Picard and stuff like that. Like, I was already kind of like, hey, it's Star Trek, so I'm on board no matter what. And it's like, and it can't really do any wrong just because it's like, hey, it's Star Trek, there's Picard, you know, it's like, you know, I will take it. So I don't know. To me, I'm like, that kind of just sums it up all the way, because, like, I've never done cosplay, but I respect it a lot, because it's like, I know how I can be so enthralled about sports, which is kind of, you know, from a geek, and Ruthie can totally, like, probably understand this, but it's like, you know, we come from football team. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like, that's such a big, huge part of our growing up and our childhood, and almost kind of like was kind of an identity of that, but Star Trek's the same. So it's like there's that connection to where it's like it could be something as simple as actually when, like, in the documentary when Tim Allen was speaking to Mazdasar, like when he was telling him that, you know, it's like, oh no, I lied, I'm an actor. And then I guess, you know, Steven Spielberg, that was the one and only time he ever showed up on set, but it's like, you know, Tim Allen like got so emotional, and, you know, it's like for him as the actor, he got emotional telling him, like, you know, hey, no, I lied to you, blah blah blah. But then us watching that scene, it's almost kind of like, yeah, I'm like, I'm tearing up, because it's like, you know, that it's like he's showing off that, you know, he's a fraud, like lying to Mazdasar, like, who, like, is like, I idolize you, and, like, you know, you can't do anything wrong. It's just that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, that's where I know I'm on a different level, because in Star Wars, I don't ever have those emotional feelings when I watch that movie. I will never cry at Star Wars, but I will bawl in Star Trek.
I know what you're saying about Star Trek versus Star Wars. I think for some reason Star Trek inspires a different type of fan loyalty. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, there are plenty of people who love Star Wars and will get all bent out of shape about whatever we say about Star Wars. I love Star Wars too, but I think there's just something about Star Trek that I connect to it more. And I don't know but that I think being a Star Trek fan means you're a part of something. Like, you're a part of a community where you automatically have people who, I mean, you have things in common with a set of people, and you can talk about, you automatically have something you can talk about if you're a Star Trek fan and you're meeting other Star Trek fans, I think. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, it's like, and I kind of agree with you, but then also it's like, yeah, I love Star Wars too. It's like, I grew up with it, you know. It's like, I watched all, I mean, the original three are the best, which are obviously what, episode 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
But I guess, at least for me, there was something about Star Trek that the connection was like, it felt like that was like, that was the hope for a future that I wanted to be a part of.
Right.
And so, Mark, like you were saying, it's like, yeah, now we have, you know, iPads. And it's like, yeah, it's like, and
flip phones before we had smartphones.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, we saw those things in, you know, the series, like in The Next Generation and on, you know, it's like they had pads that had all their, you know, information coming to them when they needed it, the computers, you know, like Wi-Fi to be like, hey, I want this. And it would just say, oh, here's the information you asked for.
You can talk to your computer now and have them respond.
Right. Yeah. And I mean,
yell at you.
Computer. Or you can hold up your mouse and say computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Computer.
It's my favorite scene, I swear. I make that joke and I'm like, no one, really?
I know it.
Well, I make that joke around people who are not huge fans, and I'm like, nobody understands. Like, I hold up my mouse, computer.
That's the best.
It's like, I'm obviously not amongst my people.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, we're still waiting on, you know, like our replicators. And
I want a transporter. That's what I want.
No,
a flying car.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
I could just skip right past the flying car and go for a transporter.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. As long as you don't get turned inside out and exploded.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I wasn't a huge Trek fan, which is ironic and weird because both of my mom and my stepdad work for Lockheed Martin. And they took me to Lockheed Martin events all the time. And I had to see the space shuttle and the rockets and everything. I was like, oh, so boring. maybe they smashed that desire out of me. I've always been a huge fantasy fan. And I totally get the part where Jason and Gwen are walking and Brandon says to them, you're at the Omega 13 or something, and they look up and it's just in awe that they see this amazing thing that could only exist in their fictitious world. Or when Jason still thinks he's on some sort of set and he gets into the transporter room and the doors open up and he sees space, and I'm like, yeah, that is just, you know, I think people love this movie because that is your fantasy or your dream life become reality.
Yeah.
And if I woke up one day and I had fallen through the wardrobe and was in Narnia or walked out my front door and I was in Middle Earth, I would be just as flabbergasted.
Yeah. If the doctor showed up outside my house and said, hey, I've got this TARDIS, I would be like, oh!
It's all real. It's all real. I knew it.
I know.
No, I'd be like, I want to be a companion. Where are we going? And like, you can just drop me off back here when we're all done.
Yep.
I would just ask, where is Karen Gillan?
Well, she married Rory.
And not then really.
She became a cyber person. He's on Peter Quill's ship and they're looking for Gamora.
That's true. Right. That's
yeah. Right. Nebula.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Well, let's go to our top three from each of us about the documentary or the movie. I just have to say, Alan Rickman, number one, he's the best character, both because he's an amazing actor already, and also the way he played this role just so brilliantly. It's one of those things that we saw, you know, in the documentary, even though it's like there was some beef or just, you know, problems between him and Tim, but it was like how they got these actors to all come together and do this movie. It's almost kind of like the casting director, Deborah Zane. Like, obviously, I hope she's getting a lot, you know, paid very well for the amazing, you know, thing she did here, because this was just, it was amazing. You know, just like how they got this ensemble. It would have never worked with anybody else.
And I think that tension between Tim Allen and Alan Rickman was probably a great thing, because it just fed into the movie and fed into their characters.
Yeah.
And I think towards the end of the documentary, you see that Alan Rickman really did have some admiration for Tim Allen when he said that, what do you say? Something like, I think he's acted
experiencing acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The time. I'm yeah. like, that's so Alan Rickman. He's so dry and so serious, but with a very sweet side to it too. But I think he takes his craft so seriously that he can sometimes be intimidating.
Yeah.
Well, look at it. After this, he did Dogma.
That's funny. He really is that person. His character is him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tim Allen's character was him too.
Yeah.
Although he felt so Buzz Lightyear, it was wonderful. Because every time they would say Jason Nesmith, I would think, this is Nesmith from Toy Story, and he's wearing the Mrs. Nesmith outfit.
Oh, goodness.
Good times.
Well, I just love the cast for, you know, the whole thing and Sigourney Weaver's boobs. You know, come on. We have Alan Rickman, Sam Rockwell before he was Sam Rockwell. This actually, you know, this came out around the same time as, what was it, Shawshank Redemption, or was it The Green Mile? Yeah. So at that time, you know, he was doing, like, he chose this because it was funny. Then we got Tony Shalhoub. Come on, we got Monk before we got Monk. And then Tim Allen and Chill before we got to see him, you know, in Fear the Walking Dead. But he wasn't on my radar until the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, which came out just before Galaxy Quest, the same year, but like months before. And yes, I saw 10 Things, you know, that 10 Things movie in the theater.
I saw it too.
Yeah, I was on a blind date and it was her choice.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, it was. I do enjoy it. Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, exactly. Shakespeare. Can't go wrong. And also, now I can't remember his name. See, this is what happens when I record late at night. My brain stops working. I can't remember anybody's name. A Knight's Tale is all I can think. What's that guy?
Justin Long.
No.
Brandon?
From A Knight's Tale?
No. A Knight's Tale.
But you're asking Brandon on the movie.
No,
she's talking about the guy Heath Ledger.
Yes, Heath Ledger. Thank you.
Oh.
Heath Ledger from 10 Things I Hate About You. It was Taming of the Shrew, which is Shakespeare, and Heath Ledger, so you can't go wrong. Anyway, okay. Moving on. My first favorite thing, in no particular order, was Brandon's whole storyline. But especially the cut of Brandon taking out the trash. He's like, Mother, this is highly inconvenient, or whatever he says. It's hilarious. And they talked about that in the documentary, and I think Laura, you mentioned it too. They talked about maybe cutting that story out, but I'm glad they left it in, because that whole story to me is the movie, honestly. Right. I mean, it's a side story, so to speak, but it really is the movie, because that is every fan's dream, for some fictional character to show up at your house and say, it's real. And, you know, we all talked about who we would freak out over actually being, you know, if someone showed up at your house and said, hey, whatever, you know, whatever thing, jump in my TARDIS or whatever. So, yeah, that whole storyline I thought was spectacular. And just that was us, you know, that was the us of the show.
Yeah. And they saved the day. If it weren't for the fans, they would have been screwed.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like that it was just a great family film. Like we mentioned, that wasn't their initial plan. They kind of got pushed down that path. But I think it's perfect because it's something that people can watch over and over again, just like families get around and watch certain movies every year. My family gets around every Christmas and we love to watch Elf. And that movie could go way deep in the weeds as far as getting, you know, crass and adult, but it's not. It towed the line and it made it funny for adults and it made it funny for kids and everyone can enjoy it. So I think that's what makes for a great classic film that you can watch when you're a kid and love and grow up with it and love it as an adult.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
Totally. Well, that just kind of leads into my number two, which was Gwen saying F you, but they dubbed it over to say screw you. but the fact that you can totally tell, but yeah, it's like you're...
I know, they didn't make any attempts to hide it.
No, but it's like... It's like, you know, again, it's like, yeah, you could be watching this with your, you know, family and your youngins and like, you know, they might not even like, they wouldn't even have caught that. It just would like, oh, you know, it's like, maybe that's a somewhat bad word depending on your family, but then we all see it. We're just like, just ooh, almost kind of like, yeah, like, and it becomes like this epic thing, like, oh my gosh, no, she actually did say that.
That even unintentionally adds to the humor of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because in that moment, we're probably right. All thinking the same thing. Like, why does this even exist? It just makes no logical sense. Oh my gosh.
Mine would be the line, and it exploded. from the third hand that transported the pig lizard thing. I was on the floor laughing when I first watched this. I was like, and it exploded.
But the creature is inside out. What? I heard that.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. Yep. That was funny. I think my favorite, and this leads into Laura's favorite line, how Guy wanted to be on the shuttle because he was afraid that he would die on the ship. But then when he got to be on the shuttle, he was afraid that he would die. He would be the one who died on the away mission because does he have a last name?
With all the fuss he gave us about coming on, what is wrong with you? With all the
fuss you made about being left behind.
That's so funny.
That was great, too, because it is that whole meta inside baseball joke of the red shirt.
Yes.
From Star Trek, which I do know.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. We'll let you stay.
Yeah. Oh, and my second favorite thing about the show was everyone in this movie seemed to be cast at just the right time. You know, like Mark was talking about, it was just the beginning of a rocketing career for Sam Rockwell. you know, he had just done The Green Mile, and it's so funny to contrast his character in this with his character in The Green Mile, who is so sadistic and horrible. And then this guy's he's just kind of a swarmy dude.
Maybe he's the plucky the comic relief.
Yeah, exactly.
And I looked on IMDb and Alan Rickman, this movie came out the same year that Dogma came out. So, you know, maybe Alan Rickman was trying out his chops at comedy. So that was a great comedic year for Alan Rickman. And again, you know, Tim Allen, I think, who did they say that they wanted? Maybe Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
Who I guess would be okay, but I just felt like Tim Allen was so perfect for this role. He had just done Toy Story, and, you know, he might have rolled the Buzz Lightyear character into this a little bit, but I thought he was perfect, and I don't think I would have wanted to see anyone else playing that role.
Yeah, they also wanted Tim Robbins, too.
Yeah, he would have been not good.
No.
Not good. They listed a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah, never mind. That's the Shawshank Redemption. I was getting my two mixed up. I'm like, that would have been weird having them both in there.
Yeah, just like I did.
they listed a lot of different people they talked about. Kevin Kline, Steve Martin, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Mel Gibson.
Oh, no. Yeah, Mel Gibson. All these people that I'm like, I just don't know that. I mean, I'm sure it would have been a fine movie, but I'm not sure that they would have had the same magic, you know?
Mm-hmm. And they really, it's funny, they didn't want anybody with a sci-fi background originally. And it wound up coming across to Sigourney Weaver. And then she was just like, oh, and she was having fun with the blonde wig or her hair dyed blonde and her fake boobs.
Push and up bra.
Yeah.
And I think it was perfect to have Sigourney Weaver in that role too, because she's such a tall woman, and yeah. she, like all the other men are like at breast height for her. Yeah. Like, he's a guy, and he's always like looking right here, and he's like, eyes up, buddy, eyes up.
Awesome. And then I'll go into my third. The Thermian cosplayers, I just like in the documentary. I mean, I loved it because they just, I don't know, it's just fun to see how much fun they were having, but then also just seeing like how the director and the producer, and like when they were doing the screening, just like how they were reacting to them. They were asking questions, and then of course the Thermians were doing their thing. They're like, la, 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 you know, just like from the yeah. you know, at the stage, and then he just turns yeah. around and he's like doing it too, and it's just like, I don't know, it was just fun to see like the what we see and some of us have experienced at cons. It's just like, you know, the fans, super fans, or whatever you want to call them, cosplayers, you know, just like, and then interacting with actually the people that they're totally cosplaying about. It was just cool.
My number three, my last one would be the fact that they kept the squid-like look of the Thermians in the movie. I mentioned it before, but in the documentary, they stated that the producer, and I think it was Steven Spielberg, but he could have been just brought in as a consultant, wanted them to look different. They didn't really want the squid, but I guess the effects guy already had everything set up and they had it already. And he was like, oh, you got the call. It's like, no, they want to change it. What? And they wanted to change it to what they look like in Close Encounters, but I'm so glad that they stuck to that.
Me too.
And then on top of that, the look of Lobsterhead and his crew and the animatronics and that, it's like that guy had to act with a lot of makeup, more so than any Star Trek character. You know, he's not Gul Dukat or, I forget his name from DS9.
Gul Dukat?
Gul Dukat, yeah. Yeah, that guy had a lot of makeup, but this guy had a lot more makeup, looking like a lobster head.
Oh, my goodness. I think randomly picked this, but I love it when they show up at the commander's house and he's dead asleep on the floor in his underwear.
With a hangover.
Yeah, with a hangover. He answers the door holding a shoe and he's about to take off and he's, maybe I should put some pants on. And these poor Thermians have no idea that this might not be how normal people act. They're just like, okay, let's go. But yeah. I just thought that scene was so awesome.
And one actor that we got out of that became a big, huge star after that was Rainn Wilson. And
yeah,
that was, yeah. I think, one of the first few things he actually auditioned for, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they talked about that in the documentary too, as we all know. We've saw it anyway. If you guys haven't seen it, you should watch it. But yes. They talked about how he would have had more, a bigger part, but he had some TV show, something or other, some pilot that he was doing or something. So,
yeah.
But, that was, first time seeing him, first time seeing so many of the Thermians, honestly. That I've seen them all now so many times, I feel like, that it's kind of like, what, they weren't always famous?
Yeah.
Yeah, this seemed to be a launching point for a lot of those actors. Yeah, my number three favorite thing was the depiction of the stereotypes. That was obviously part of the comedy of it. You had Guy, who was just the typical red shirt, and he's always afraid the entire time in the show that he's going to get killed off. You had Gwen, who was just supposed to be this typical space age bombshell, and her only job is to repeat everything that the computer says. And of course the Spock sort of member, who is Alan Rickman's character, Alexander Dane, and he's supposed to be the most intelligent person on the ship, but he always is upstaged by his captain. And of course Tim Allen's character, who is just this space age cowboy and talks about how, you know, he's got to do the role because, you know, the role is effective. And then you see it at the very end when they crash land into the con and he does his role and pulls up the gun and shoots the bad guy. Like, wow, it really does work. And of course, Tim Allen's getting his shirt ripped off, and how they said in the documentary he wasn't going to end up wearing that shirt the entire time. So when he's teleported back onto the ship, he just reaches down and all of a sudden he's got his black t-shirt back on again. Another weirdo part, which I don't know if they talked about it in the documentary, but at the very end when the reactor is counting down and there's only 1 second left, he goes to hug Gwen, and you know, her top is zipped up somewhat modestly, and then they're hugging and they pull back and it's all the way down here. His bra's hanging up. What happened? And it's like that for the rest of the show. I'm like, what? Did he get his in? What happened? How come her top is all the way unzipped to her navel now?
They must have not had enough extra footage when they edited it. They're probably just like, whoops, we have to let that slide.
I just thought that was great. And, you know, but they're all endearing and it's not making fun of the stereotypes. I mean, in a little way, it's obviously a key point of the comedy, but it's also a bit endearing and obviously meant a lot to the fans, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's like tongue-in-cheek making fun. It's not really, it's not laughing at so much as laughing with. Like, we all acknowledge the goofiness that sometimes happens. One of the people that was talking about it said something about that, how, yeah, we understand that it can be super cheesy, but we still are, like, hardcore into it kind of a thing. I thought that was funny. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. It's like, yes, we get it. When we watch the original series, we're like, oh, but still, it's serious.
Yeah. Well, there was a, I wrote it down, but I'm not sure who it came from, but it was talking about, it's like, you know, it's like you're looking at Star Trek and being so invested in it, but also knowing how ridiculous it is.
Yes.
And it's like, that's why we love it. It's like we're totally in it, but we know it can be ridiculous, but that doesn't matter because, you know, we get it.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly what I was talking about.
All right. Well, to end this off, then let's get some of our favorite quotes. And mine is, because of Alan Rickman and his character and all the trials and troubles that he went through, was that the, obviously, well, I don't forget, was it was Computer World or whatever, the store opening, and then he has to say his line that he doesn't want to ever say, but it was just the fact that
Gwen elbows him.
Yeah, but it's just so funny because it's like, the whole, that whole verse is, you know, he doesn't want to ever say it because all his friends are into it. But this one is like, oh, but it's changed because they're opening a store. And it's like, by Grathar's hammer, what a savings.
But the way he delivers it is so deadpan. So amazing.
And I'll play it right now.
By Grathar's hammer, what a savings.
I love the part, like, and then his pause, and then he says that, and then it's like, and then Gwen, like, goes and cuts the ribbon, and then there's like two balloons go up in the air. It's just like, it's like that whole scene. I just absolutely loved it. It's one of my favorites.
Yep.
All right, Mark, what was your favorite quote?
Well, that would be with Guy and, what is it, Fred Kwan?
Yeah, Sergeant Chen.
Deck Sergeant Chen. And he's like, he goes, Kwan's not my real name. And he has to flush the bad guys out of the airlock. Oh, no, it wasn't the airlock, was it? It was the rock monster coming in. Yeah, that's what it was. He transports the rock monster into the same room as the bad guys. And next thing you know, it's like the female just starts going. Yeah, she starts to like make out with him. And then next thing you know, you see the tentacles.
Yes. The guys just, I head.
Oh, that's okay, just not guys, right.
And then, oh, that's not right.
No. Hold on. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's not right. No.
I love it. Like, no.
That's not right. No. No,
that's too funny. There are so many good quotes in this. You can't really pick one, but it's like
pick one. Oh my gosh. I think something that I did with one of my friends that I made watch this movie so many times is we would do the Tommy's quote when they're talking about how they're going to get the beryllium sphere. And Tommy's like talking about how he's going to give him a sign. And he says, I'll do my hands like this and I'll go, caw, caw. And then Jason says, what are you, an infant? We have these.
Plan. Gwen, Fred, Alex, and I will go down to the sphere. Fleegman, you set up a perimeter and Tommy, your lookout. You see anything at all, you give us a signal, all right?
What kind of a signal?
Any kind of signal.
Okay, I'll do my hands like this.
Caw, caw. What are you, an infant? Look, we have these.
Sorry. Right. That's so funny. Oh gosh.
I love that one so much. Oh my gosh.
All right, Laura, what was yours?
Mine is a little bit subtle, and which is the reason I love it so much. So they're joking this whole time about how Guy's the extra and he's going to die at any moment. And they land on the planet with the children aliens. And at first they think they're adorable. And of course they turn out to be blood sucking monsters. And Gwen DeMarco just drops casually in the background, let's get out of here before one of those things kills Guy.
I'm so sick of being right.
Get out of here before one of those things kills Guy.
Wait a minute. We're not going.
I laugh at that. I laugh. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I laugh again about it.
Yes. I love that.
They didn't say anything in the documentary, and I don't know if it's anywhere, if there's anything on the DVD about it, but like they did talk about so much of how they would just kind of ad lib or like kind of play off each other or kind of do things not necessarily like exactly how the script was. So I wonder if this was one of those moments or did they actually, this was actually written down.
I don't know, but that would be hilarious.
Yeah. The delivery was what was amazing because you almost, if you weren't paying attention, you would have not have caught it. And then maybe like the next scene and all of a sudden you're like, wait, did she just say something about Guy?
That's why I said I laughed and laughed about him. And 10 minutes later, I'm thinking about it. I'm laughing again.
Yeah. That is one of my favorite lines as well. And it takes you by surprise, like you say. It's like, you're not, like, you chuckle at the time, but then you think about it and it's like, oh my gosh, that's so funny.
My second favorite would be the miners, not miners.
Yeah, miners, not miners.
Not miners.
Oh my gosh.
Too funny.
Yeah, that whole thing. Hit it in its eye. It's vulnerable spot. It's a rock. It doesn't have any vulnerable spots.
Construct a lathe. Look around you.
I love when the children aliens. This joke was in subtitles, so I don't know if it's considered a great quote or not, but I love when they're looking at Tim Allen and they're like, look at him. He looks like a little child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What should we do with him? Hit him with a rock.
Yeah. Hit him with a rock. One of my other favorite lines or scenes from the movie is when he's hitting on Laliari and he's like, well, she doesn't talk much, does she? Her translator is broken.
And then that reminded me of Splash.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
So much.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yep.
Well, and I guess it just sort of throwing a couple that was when Gwen basically at the end after the chompers, and she was just all like, whoever like wrote this episode should die. After they survived like all this crazy and the fire, like the fire at the end is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like, she's like,
I love how she's so like, funny. Why is this even in here? It makes no logical sense.
It was on the TV show, Gwen.
Yeah, exactly. I think too, when we're talking about the cast, we have to talk about the actors who played the Thermians, honestly. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
So amazing. The main cast, yes, they were amazing. Also the side story with Justin Long, who is like a nerd's nerd. Also amazing choices for the cast all. And I think honestly, probably I love when what's his name? Enrico Cantaloni or something. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Enrico something or other shows up. Every time I get so tickled, I'm like, oh, I love him, because I always remember him from Galaxy Quest. I'm like, oh, same thing with Sam Rockwell. I mean, just.
He was in Frasier. That actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also in Person of Interest.
Yep.
And so many other things. I mean, I think that's one of the most amazing things. Like, these people have just been in so much stuff now that it's like, I can't even. I don't know. They're just, it's amazing. The show, this movie was amazing.
They were supposed to do a TV show.
Yeah.
And that was, they were talking about that before Rickman passed away.
Yeah.
And it just never happened.
There's still talk about it, either like on Amazon or somebody picking it up. I mean, I guess it was being worked on with Amazon, but like, I hope they do something, because, you know, I guess maybe they need a couple more years before they bring it back and get everybody excited, because Trek's on right now, but I don't know.
I don't know.
And the Orville.
The Orville is doing fine, even though it's sharing airspace with Star Trek, so.
Yeah, it's just a lighthearted version.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, it's Seth MacFarlane's love letter to Star Trek, I think.
Yeah.
Honestly, I have mixed feelings about that, doing a show with that, because I just can't imagine it without Alan Rickman. I don't know.
Yeah, same here. The movie is the movie, and you can't really remake it or put it into a TV show at this point.
I don't think it's something that could be easily recaptured, and I don't really know that you necessarily should. I mean, I think that's part of the problem I see a lot of times, is people are like, they want to just ride that golden goose until it's dead, and just
It's kind of like sequelizing, and they make it worse. Yeah.
I think when you start to franchise everything, it loses some of its uniqueness and specialness.
Right.
Yeah.
Some things need to just remain as they are. I think there was some talk about doing a sequel to The Princess Bride, and even Carrie Ulis said, you know, spoke out against it, because it's like, once you do that, it's lost its uniqueness, and it's no longer a unicorn.
It's part of a
franchise.
Yeah. And I think that's like the thing, that when they start doing these like reboots or like these like just redoing of like old nostalgic stuff, that, you know, we would be like, for their, I guess, the audience that they're trying to like maybe cater to, but then also bring in like the younger generation. It's just like, it almost cannot translate, because so much has changed. It's like the 80s or like a completely different world than it is now. So it's like when they talked about redoing War Games with Matthew Broderick, I was like, that doesn't exist anymore, because we don't have the Russians. We don't have really this nuclear war thing. We're dealing with pandemics now. So it's like, maybe that's more of your kind of angle.
They did make a sequel of that went under everybody's radar.
Oh, well, obviously I didn't pay attention to that. Yeah, but good.
I mean, that's part of the problem, is you can't recapture that magic necessarily. I mean, and I don't know that we really should,
right?
No.
I think I sometimes just let it stand on its own, let it be as it is, and appreciate it for the wonderfulness that it is. And I mean, Galaxy Quest is just so amazing. I want it to just stand on its own and just be how it is.
Yeah, just like the Goonies. You don't want to touch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the end of our show, so let's head on to how you can interact with us. To interact with us, we'd encourage you to follow us on Twitter, and you can find us at Let's Talk to TTM. To submit your suggestions for future podcasts and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find us at facebook.com/groups/letstalkthrough. You can also email us at talkthroughttm@gmail.com, and we also have our feedback form over at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. We will, if you want to leave us any kind of voicemail for either suggestions for future shows or for feedback on a current topic that we're going to discuss, you can call 630-474-3218. Also, don't forget all our episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media. And remember to subscribe and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos. This is for the whole entire network, and not just DISSO, but as we do the podcast, like it gets sent to YouTube first, and then it will hit your podcast client of choice. To support us, we like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. And the best way you can support us is subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast client of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. Remember to share a post on Facebook and Twitter when you post them, or tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way we get new listeners.
Alrighty. If you guys want to hear more from me, you can hear me on Star Trek Picard and Star Trek Discovery. We just finished the first season of Star Trek Picard, and we are looking forward to recording another Patreon episode coming up soon. I think we're having a call-in show. I don't know if that'll be out before this is out, though, so maybe just not. I'll leave that out. Anyway, we're doing more stuff. We're looking forward to the season premiere of Star Trek Discovery, although we don't know when that will be because, again, apocalypse. So, look for new stuff from Star Trek Picard in the interim.
All right, Mark. Where can people listen to you?
Yeah, they could listen to me on Panels to Pixels on the Next Level Podcast Radio Network. And right now, Steve and I are doing The Witcher. That's on Netflix. So follow us through and, you know, leave some comments if you like.
Awesome. And you can listen to Mark as well as me as well as Brian on The Walking Dead Talk Through. Obviously, with the finale being pushed to who knows when sometime this year, the new spinoff series, The World Beyond, is not happening, and or, you know, not now. Yeah, the pandemic basically put us all on pause. So hopefully not too much longer, because kind of need to find out what happened at the end of The Walking Dead. Laura, do you have anything going on?
I have nothing to promote because I am a busy mom with an erratic schedule and obviously no fancy audio equipment, but we'll promote some of the talk through artwork that I have done for Mark and Brian. And I also want to promote helping out your local small businesses as far as restaurants and shops during this pandemic time. I work for a wine and beer distributor, and we service a lot of small mom and pop restaurants in our area, and they all need your help. So if you can, and you have the resources, order out, buy gift certificates, do what you can for your neighbors.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. And also, saw something in the news, you know, talking about some of those meat packing or distributing plants shutting down. It's like, there are many local farms in your area that you could order like meats and eggs and all that stuff. So it's like,
go to your farmer's markets if they're open.
Yeah.
Our local farmer's markets are doing, order online and drop off too. So that's an option as well.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. Well, our next episode, we were really just kind of like calling out on any listeners that, like, if you want to like jump into our Facebook page, you know, maybe give us some comments of like different topics that you might like to hear from us. Kind of started thinking about like we could do like 80s movies and how they stand the test of time or not, which we were kind of talking about, you know, the reboots of shows or remakes. You know, it's kind of like, kids shows growing up, or what's considered kids shows now, like Pee-wee's Playhouse compared to SpongeBob, or I was thinking like G.I. Joe compared to, and then I was like, I'm obviously not watching cartoons currently, so I'm like, I don't know what the current, you know, kids show cartoon is going on right now, but something on that end would be awesome, and definitely could, like, you know, add one of those to our list, a growing list. So I guess until next time, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Laura.
And this is Let's Talk Through. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody, and never surrender.
Good night.
Well, that's the end of our show, so let's head on to how you can interact with us.